Welcome to the Living Dice Podcast. Today's show, RPGs on the High Seas. Welcome. Welcome to the Living Dice Podcast, where we talk about all things gaming with an eye towards the evolved gamer. I'm Trent. This is my co-host, Stuart. Say hello, Stuart.
Arr, matey.
I knew you would do that. Honestly, I'm a little shocked I didn't bust out the R first. So, of course, we're talking about RPGs on the high seas. So, the first topic is, of course, say it with me, folks, pirates. Yes. All right, Stuart, what are your thoughts on the pirates? They're a cliche. We got to do better. Our listeners demand more of us than the cliche.
Have you ever had a role-playing group that didn't eventually revolve into some sort of pirate action?
Okay, there were some moments when the piracy was usually against evil folk, but I've had more than a couple that degenerated down to, oh, look, they have nicer sails than we do. And it was off to the races.
Yeah, everyone loves pirates. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. So when you're in one of those groups deciding what you want to play, whether it's a new game or whether it's where you want to take your current game, I mean, the thought of pirates is a natural one. So it's a very loved topic in the gamer and geek community.
All right, here's my gripe about the pirate thing. The raging cliches. Like, I'm not a complete fanatical history geek like those old neckbeard grognards who argue about whether or not a Roman chariot wheel has 4 versus 5 spokes. That said, the pirates that I always run into are the sort of Errol Flynn and, oh, God's help me, Pirates of the Caribbean sort of style of pirates. And I think that's been beat to death just as a cliche.
Yeah, well, I think here lies the problem, and I don't think pirates are unique to this, but I think if you studied the history, it's probably not that it's all cracked up to be. I mean, you got the bunch of stinky men, a lot of them serving out at sea, maybe against their will, you know, getting the scurvy. It's just not romantic. It's the romantification of pirates in movies, in TV, in books that make us love them. It is the cliches that we hold on to. And that's the same, you know, for just generic fantasy. I mean, knights and castles and dragons, and it's the romanticism that we want. So when you're playing pirates in an RPG, you've got to grasp onto those cliches because that's what everyone's looking for.
Well, I have to offer a little, I love this word, verisimilitude, a little more reality into my game. So to that end, I read a book, which is a dangerous thing for me, but I did. It's called Under the Black Flag, The Romance and the Reality of Life Among the Pirates. It's an excellent read. It's a short book. I highly recommend everyone go out to Amazon and take a look at it. I'll have a link in the show notes to it. But it actually talks about the day-to-day mechanics of being a pirate. And some of them are interesting enough, I think they should be integrated into a game. And until you read the book, you don't really understand. My personal favorite, and I don't know why this excites me so much, is ship maintenance. So pirates had wooden ships. Right. They were not great wooden ships often, and they were tended to be on the small side. First of all, those giant ships in Pirates of the Caribbean, completely unrealistic. Those are ships of the line. Those are gigantic, massive man-of-war, you know, military-grade vessel. A lot of these guys were, you know, doing their pirate thing in these, you know, 12 to 15-man ships. They had cannons and whatnot, but back to maintenance. Believe it or not, pirates valued speed, which makes sense because faster is better when you're trying to catch a victim. But they had problems with seaweed, where they had to actually beach their ship every couple of months and spend 3 days scraping the bottom of their ship for kelp.
You know, that's interesting. I was going to bring that up because I've, you know, been watching the Black Sails TV show, and I won't give away any spoilers, but In the, I believe it was the first season, they did just that. I thought it was for barnacles or whatnot, but I guess it's for anything. But they docked that ship and tilted it to the side and scraped off the bottom. And it's like, wow, I've never thought of that before.
Yeah, they didn't have a choice because it apparently once the seagrass growing on their ship got to, you know, 2 or 3 feet long, it actually created enough drag they couldn't sail very fast, so they didn't have a choice. In fact, there's a couple of cases where the pirates were out doing the dirty business and they had to pull over for a seaweed pit stop, and the British Navy showed up while they were on shore. Bummer.
Now, by dirty business, you mean piracy, right?
Indeed, yes. Okay. What other kinds of dirty business did you have in mind?
That's a different show with a different rating.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, things like that add a level of reality. Things like pirate ships tended to be overstaffed. If a ship needed 12 people to operate and it was legitimate, you know, freighter, trader, whatever, a pirate ship would have 30 or 40 just because they needed people to scramble up the ropes and go across to the other ship. Things like that. The fact they didn't murder shipwrights because many of them were pressed into involuntary service to help service the pirate ship. What struck me as odd, though, is that they were very democratic. Many of them actually voted for their captain. They actually had written articles of confederation where they agreed on in advance booty splits and whatnot. So it's a different type of pirate than Johnny Depp. And even saying that name causes me a little twinge of pain deep in my soul.
Johnny, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
I'm not Johnny.
All right, so this is a podcast about games, not about history, although history is very important. So how do you take what you've learned? What are some interesting things that you've learned, and how would it translate into the game table?
Okay, so the usual setup is you got a couple situations. You've got the players, the PCs, the players themselves, getting a ship and then going off into whatever ocean they happen to be on to do straight up piracy. I don't know if it's evil per se, but marginally so. The alternative is you can give them a different option. Rather than be straight up evil, they could be sanctioned pirates. You ever heard of something called letters of marque and reprisal?
Yes.
Indeed, yes. Believe it or not, American constitutional law. If you look in the American Constitution, there is a line item about letters of marque and reprisal, which allows Congress to grant these letters to private individuals to go pirate enemies of the country. In fact, Sir Francis Drake, being the notable example historically, could do it because the Queen gave him a similar letter and said, you know, go beat up our enemies, which he did. Didn't always go very well when he came back, but that's a separate show as well. But how do you bring that to the game table? Back to the original question. The answer is you have to give the players something, a reason to be pirates. Intrinsic evilness is always sort of a sticking point for me in games because far too many people are obsessed with orcs are evil because they're evil, or the players are pirates, so they must be evil. There's a lot more subtlety, a lot more gray area there, and I think there's some real opportunity for some good gaming in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, that's not just the pirates or any kind of high seas or gaming in general. I think if the GM can strike the balance of shades of gray instead of black and white, I mean, that's always going to be a boost to your game. It's going to add those decision points, those situations that will be remembered after the players leave the table.
Which brings me to my another historic example. Apologies to the listeners. I'm a history geek, so unfortunately I tend to regale you with tales of history. You ever heard of a guy named Captain Kidd?
I have heard of Captain Kidd, yes.
Okay, Captain Kidd's a very famous pirate. He indeed was a pirate, not arguing that point. However, interestingly, he didn't start that way. He put together an expedition to India, I believe. Could be wrong on that. My memory fails me in my old age. He was going to go sail and do trading and make a bunch of money. And he made a bunch of promises to people in England and the Queen that we're going to make a bunch of money. And he got out there and a few months in, he realized he wasn't going to make any money. So he turned to piracy. So he went from perfectly legitimate businessman to desperate pirate of the high seas and eventually executed, if I'm not mistaken. Bottom line is, I could just see a great game where the players are, you know, signed on to this, you know, exciting expedition, and maybe they have some sort of intervening adventures, and then the captain just sort of gets more desperate, and suddenly the adventure turns from, oh yes, we're going to trade with the natives, to we're going to sack the native village and kidnap them until they give up their gold. And I assume the player characters, who probably started out with, you know, good intentions, might have issues with that.
Are we talking mutiny here?
Oh, your segue is awesome. That's a great segue. I love it. Well, you know, it happens.
Yeah, I think mutiny is a plot point that's easily used when you're playing some sort of game on the high seas. And rightfully so, because it adds a level of contention that is realistic and fun. Now, hopefully, well, maybe not hopefully, but if your players are mutineering or mutinying, what's the terminology?
They're mutinying. Yeah, mutinying? I think so.
The players are mutinying against other players. You know, that might make the GM's job tough. But if the players are mutinying against the captain, or they are in command of a ship and they have lower level scum that is mutinying against them, the drama will unfold.
Indeed. And I, here's the thing. Ships, excuse me, films and TV shows, whenever they have a mutiny, they sort of just have these, you know, dramatic sword fights and everybody's going for their flintlock. Fine, whatever, tradition. I'm all for it. It's a great gaming moment. But they tend to forget the logistics. Like, you got to have a shipwright, because most wooden ships, assuming you're playing in this era, and that's the assumption I'm making, are completely dependent on somebody continuously fixing them. Basically 24/7, the dude's running around, you know, patching holes and checking to make sure everything's okay. And should the shipwright get killed in the mutiny, then your ship is in danger. So issues like that, they just kind of gloss over, like, can everybody navigate? I mean, what if the mutineers are a bunch of low-level idiots who don't know how to navigate the ship? Which has happened a couple of times. I believe some ships with human cargo actually had mutinies, and they, once they took the ship, they won, but then they couldn't navigate the ship. They didn't know where they were, so they couldn't use a sextant. So, I mean, they just don't cover stuff about that, and it drives me crazy, because those are great ways to really make the game seem more real and to give the player something to really fret about.
So I guess to add to that, if you are looking to play a role-playing game on the high seas, if your intent starts that way, it should be pretty easy for the characters, because they can build characters around that. But if you're playing in an existing game where the characters decide, hey, let's take a ship out and have some fun, that could be a very dangerous course for them if they're not skilled appropriately or have the correct talent along with them.
Yeah, it's pretty common. Naval ships even today have marine contingents. While they have some familiarity with the ocean, they're not sailors per se. They're straight up ground pounders, beach assault. They'll take another ship if you want, but run the ship? Probably not so much. So I think that issues like that could make for some great gaming moments. But we can't get completely sidetracked on the human element here, right? I mean, because if you're going to play RPGs on the high seas, there's other stuff on the seas you have to worry about. Notably, and this is my personal favorite, the ocean itself.
Oh,
whenever
yes.
You're sailing on, it can try to kill you in 300 different ways.
Yes, that's once you step off of land and you go into water, it's a tiny piece of wood between you and certain death. So not only do the players have to act accordingly, I think the GM needs to be prepared for that as well. If you're going to RPG on the high seas, you need to think in advance about what are you going to do with your whatever rule set you're playing with to deal with swimming, underwater combat, breathing, holding your breath, like have all these things ready to go, because they will come up.
Before we even get to that point, you have to sail the ship.
Well,
so
there's that too, yeah.
You've got weather issues. You've got exotic threats of the ocean, rogue waves. my personal favorite, methane hydrates.
Okay, but again, we're playing a game here, Trent. So when we're playing a fantasy game, we're taking a wagon across the countryside, we're not generally concerning ourselves with proper wheel maintenance and lubrication. And
No. That's I'm not saying
the horses. So
no, absolutely not. That's not. I'm not saying bury the game in realism or anything like that. But nothing beats a good hurricane to make the blood pump amongst your PCs.
Yes, there is a lot of dangerous things in the GM's arsenal that they can have fun with.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to always be a monster, which I've noticed a lot of GMs, depending on the game, tend to get buried in the monster manual or whatever the equivalent in the game they're playing is. And they seem to be obsessed with monsters. And of course, you know, sea monsters are a perfectly acceptable option. I have no problem with that, but I want to see a little more variety in my encounters.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's so many things that could be bad. You know, we've talked about many of them, weather, the ship itself. And you know, what about a bunch of, you know, stinky guys or gals on the ship together all in one place? I mean, I assume you've heard of the scurvy, right?
Yeah, scurvy. That's fun. Bleeding gums and your teeth fall out. Lovely. So, yeah, I mean, you've got things like that, but you could go even more exotic than that because you could skin a high seas game with another genre and pull it off. The classic example being, look, Horatio Hornblower is the famous British fictional character who started out as an able-bodied seaman and eventually becomes admiral or some such in a series of books, and he has adventures around the world. That was stolen pretty much wholesale to make the original Star Trek series, which Gene Roddenberry described as Horatio Hornblower in space. But you don't even have to go that far. The personal favorite that I've been kicking around as a potential campaign is there's a series of books written by a name who eludes me, but they're called Under a Graveyard Sky, and it's High Seas with a Zombie Apocalypse. So they come across cruise ships and they have to, you know, storm the ship and sort of sweep them for, you know, the undead, and land has basically become a no-go zone because of the zombies, and it's become Waterworld where the land exists, but you can't go there because you'll be eaten.
Yes. Yeah, you definitely, I mean, pirates in the traditional sense obviously are in the you know, golden age of piracy, I guess, or you're talking the Caribbean and the ships of sail and all that. But yeah, Waterworld's a great example. It could be futuristic. You know, you have games like Freeport, which, you know, there's orcs and halflings and all that mixed in with your pirates. Or you have, you know, even the Numenera game that we play. They came out with a supplement dealing with Numenera and the ocean. It's called Into the Deep. And, you know, we're driving around in little Numenera submarines. It's there's many different flavors, but it all comes back to that same core of man versus water versus monster versus weather versus anything else you want to throw at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're running around in the high seas. You can do pretty much everything you want, everything from tsunamis to sea serpents. And in that sense, there's a lot of flexibility. But I'm just trying to get people to think a little outside of the, what's the word I'm looking for, kind of combat encounter box. Because the high seas are about more than just, you know, high adventure. Occasionally you have mundane issues like two ships meet in the middle of the ocean. Maybe they're from a country you don't have the greatest relationship with. How do you deal with that? Do you float the flag and white flag and go across and meet in the middle of the ocean? Do you negotiate? Do you trade? Trade was a big deal. Ships that met in the ocean often exchanged goods, services, and even mail.
What happens if you're in the middle of the high seas and your ship runs out of toilet paper?
Yeah, well, that's an easy one to solve because they didn't use any. They had, I believe, and this is no joke, a tar-coated piece of hemp rope.
See, listeners, history can be fun and exciting.
That's one piece of history. I'm glad is history.
Tar-coated hemp rope. Yeah, and I assume this was shared amongst crewmen.
Of course.
Yes. All right. We need to move on from this topic.
You asked. I have no sympathy. But let's get down to some brass tacks. Let's talk about some actual RPGs that sort of are, what's the word I'm looking for? Themed?
So I guess you have two options. I mean, you have RPGs that were built to be pirates or built to be high seas adventures.
Seventh Sea being the obvious example.
Seventh Sea, Freeport, you know, but the game they call Pirates, that hero system game.
Oh yeah, and there was an old one from many years ago involving duelists that was sort of 18th century. You could do ship to ship during that too. Flashing Blades, I believe. Yeah, it was Flashing Blades. Old school.
And, you know, then you have the games that can tag on to the game you're already playing. You have things like, if you're playing in the GURPS, well, GURPS is kind of a weird example because you could be going straight into GURPS, but they have a swashbuckler add-on. You can add, you know, like we talked about the Numenera, the Into the Deep supplement kind of adds that into the game. And, you know, Pathfinder, D&D, they've all had supplements that you can add this level of stuff into the game that you're already playing.
Well, since we just got back from Gen Con, I have to bring up the one game which I think I have no interest in playing, but would to be able to do it is, of course, Starfinder, which is all about ships.
Yeah. In space, so not really the high seas, but
space, high seas, it's all kind of the same thing.
I think you have a new level. But yes, I would agree. A lot of the concepts would carry over because you're in this vessel out in the middle of nowhere with a dangerous environment surrounding you.
Exactly. Well, my contribution is kind of not obscure, but definitely lesser known is, and I preface this with saying I hate the system. It is, of course, Rifts Under Seas.
All right. Well, we shouldn't hate. We shouldn't hate. We just don't prefer.
All right. I just, here's the horrible thing about Rifts. I like everything about it except the system. Maybe I should clarify that. Which I'm looking forward to Rifts Savage Worlds. But regardless, probably now 15, 20 years ago now, they put out Rifts Under Seas, which had, I thought was a great supplement. It had rules for, you know, above water, below water, flying, not flying. They even had my personal favorite, a bipedal cyborg shark robot that could hunt you down and eat you.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. So there was a lot of great things to recommend it. I think it was as a source book, I thought it was really good. Again, system, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, you can find source books about piracy everywhere. And I think really, if you're running a game designed around it, then you're going to probably want to find a book married to the system that you're in. If you're not, you know, if you could find one of these other books, one that looks good, something that your local bookstore or used bookstore filled with ideas, because the concepts are going to be the same. I mean, you as a GM, like we said, you got to figure out all these rules and what does it mean to be in the water and how are ships going to combat each other. I mean, you're going to have to figure that out. But once you do, you know, all these books are a wealth of great ideas, even whether you like the rules or not.
True. And even then, of course, you could mine the usual assortment of the usual suspects. Now, obviously, I mentioned Under the Black Flag, which that'll be in the show notes. But of course, you've got, you know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Hornblower, some other good high adventure. And of course, the oodles of 1930s pirate movies at the heyday of Errol Flynn and company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And currently, you know, we have Black Sails. You have, even though you're not high on it, the Pirates of the Caribbean is great eye candy if you're into pirate adventures.
True, it is. It is. But that definitely has been reskinned. I don't think anybody's going to argue that's like supernatural piracy. I always thought a good horror piracy would be great. And I'm not, and Pirates of the Caribbean isn't really horror. It's sort of Disney-fied horror.
Yeah, it's more fantasy. It's fantasy pirates.
Yeah, as opposed to the nastiness of a true horror. I mean, yeah, you can pretty much skin anything, but I don't know. Well, for what it's worth, I think that the high seas options are plentiful and endless, but my plea once again is to reach beyond the cliche and do something, you know, mix and match some genres together, get a little more creative with the plot besides just sailing around sacking ships, which you can do that too, but it just seems like you're missing out on a lot of role-playing opportunities.
Yeah, and don't forget the political intrigue of the era. You know, if you're in the traditional pirate era of the world, the political part was probably more dangerous sometimes than the actual ship-to-ship combat. So have your guys get off the boat every once in a while and explore the different towns with the different factions and countries that were trying to get a head up on the others.
Well, my suggestion, which just occurred to me, I probably should have mentioned it sooner, was the captains of ships, even pirate ships, let's assume you're a authorized pirate and you've been given letters of mark and reprisal and whatnot, and you're out there and you do the nasty against the wrong person, you have basically just picked a fight that your government may not want you to have picked. Sure. So you could, in fact, have created some sort of international incident, even though you were vaguely authorized. And I think items like that, like, you could have this whole success. Oh, we did all this amazing stuff. And if you're a GM, you could really talk it up. Oh, you got all this cool stuff. You did an amazing thing, blah, blah, blah. And they get back and discover they just started a war. And things like that really make it more entertaining besides just sacking ships.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You could have a whole adventure just figuring out how to clean up your, what you say, an international incident.
Yes.
Yeah. And you got to figure out how you're going to sell your stuff too. You know, you sack a ship and get all the gold. You can't just float up with a ship full of gold bars and not have some eyes turn your way.
Indeed. And I think I should also point out that many pirates historically were in fact closer to raiders because they would sail into a town and sack the town. Vikings obviously didn't do much ship to ship. They did that sort of thing, but they were sort of technically pirates. They would sail up a river and jump off their ship and, you know, sack your village and steal your gold and then get back on the ship and sail away. And many Caribbean pirates did that as well. Small coastal villages with minimal defenses, they were easy pickings.
Yep, absolutely. So it is a wealth of opportunity and fun to be had sailing on the high seas with a good crew of PCs and a dangerous wind of a GM.
No, I think it'd be even more fun to have a dangerous group of PCs you can't trust, because there's nothing that says pirates are nice to each other. So little PC on PC action, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Got to work your way to the top of the ship.
Indeed. Although that's also, as I mentioned, that some of these ships were very democratic. So you could, of course, petition to be captain. So you could have a very sort of democratic environment with 20 people and you're working to make a deal. Similar to what's Night's Watch voting for.
Oh, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, exactly. They're very egalitarian. Everybody voted. They picked the guy that they thought would do the best job. Or in the pirate's case, make the most money. Yeah. But anyway, all right. Well, I think we flogged this horse to death. If you're interested in taking a look at Under the Black Flag, I'll include it in the show notes, along with an explanation of my throwaway about methane hydrates. And anything else we mentioned will be at livingdice.com/3, just the number 3. And that will get you to the show notes. And for the time being, we are out of here. See you next time.